cliffcentral.com.
It's another installment of the Renegade Report. Ramon,
Jonathan, bang. One can't complain. How's things?
Yeah, you know, Renegade Lives Matter.
Well, that's just us then, and our guest, I think.
And all our listeners.
Right, Renegade's listeners' lives matter too.
Yeah.
May they increase.
Absolutely. So, this week on the show, we have a guest by the name of Justin McCarthy. You might know Justin from his Opinionista column, not allowed to call it a column on its own, in the Daily Maverick. He's basically a recovering ad man and now is a marketing consultant. So, Justin, welcome to the show.
Morning. Thank you.
There we go. Sometimes I don't get the mics right. You cool?
Yep, good. You're just ready? A bit loud in my ears.
We will fix that.
Thanks.
Cool.
There we go. And so, and by the way,
music.
Yeah, and Justin is an avid listener of the show, from what I've heard.
Yes, I
think.
Do.
Yeah, great. So for listeners out there, if you are very interesting and want to be on the show, please do get hold of us.
You won a free trip to the show.
Well, you complimented me by calling me interesting before I've even said anything. So,
well, I know you.
I'll take it.
I know you from outside the show as well. So, Justin, marketing. Big thing with elections coming up.
Always. That's what elections are about.
Yeah, one would think. Probably the biggest marketing, what can you say? Campaigns, there you go. The biggest marketing campaigns are political ones, one could argue.
Well, if you just look at money spent, you know, in the United States, in the elections coming up, in the U.S. election year, the advertising industry or spend increases by... I'm talking nationally, by in the region of 5 to 10%, which in a trillion-dollar industry
is huge.
It's massive.
Yeah.
Enormous. Look, they do spend more than anyone else, just virtually. But yeah, it's something that touches at least 50% of the population and means something to 50% of the population usually, which is a rather large audience to be speaking to.
Yeah, it's 175 million people, 50% of the population there.
Yeah, those who are interested, it'll touch all 300 million or 200 million of them,
right.
But 150 to 200 million of them will take some form of interest.
So let's bring it back here. So, I mean, everyone, all the major political parties are on the campaign spree. They're all spending who knows how many millions of rands on posters and slogans and whatever else they need. How do you find marketing politically in South Africa?
Generally, appalling, just crap.
What's the sort of reasoning behind that? You got to justify that.
No, sure. I know. No, I understand that. I'll give you the short answer, then I'll give you a long explanation. Look, I think, with one exception, I think the ANC did a very good job from 1994 until 2009.
What's that? The Better Lives for All campaign.
Yeah. A Better Life for All.
Yeah.
when I say as a campaign, I think that first of all they were in marketing. You've got to be your message has to mean something, so it has a relevance. It has to have some form of a promise, and has to be actionable and measurable to some extent, and. I think A Better Life for All, given the background and the history of the ANC, there was an enormous, and there still is an enormous amount of equity. It has nothing to do with the campaign line. They could have said, which they did a lot of times, just vote ANC and put Nelson Mandela's picture on the poster, and that worked equally as well because of the equity in the brand. But if you're a newer brand, a younger brand, without the history and the equity that the ANC has, you've got to work a lot harder. So it was a lot easier a job for a brand like the ANC to do, but... That said, nonetheless, I think they did a pretty good job of being A, relevant, and B, consistent in terms of promising a better life for all. They were forced to change it by the time 2007 came around, 2009 came around, and they came up with a good story to tell. And, well...
And moving forward, or something they stole from Standard Bank, wasn't that also around there?
Oh, there was some... Yeah, I don't think it might have been an election, a local election campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was something simpler, better, moving backwards, something of some confusion.
They were forced to change it?
Well, I don't say they were forced to change it, but they changed it. I don't know what the reasons were. But they changed it to, what's the line? I've got it actually written down because I've got a very poor memory.
So we told Justin that he came more prepared than we did. So
a good story to tell. Sorry, there we
yeah,
go.
Yeah.
So a good story to tell.
That, and that then gets included in the president's speech. And obviously, they're very good at carrying the byline.
They're very good. And that's the point. When I say consistency, it's everywhere. Every speech ends with every press release, everything posted on their website, every poster that they run, every television campaign. They don't run much television. Radio campaigns.
Even find a way to incorporate it often into local councils or municipal vehicles. For example, paramedical vehicles, I don't know if they still do, but for a long time had along the wheel arches something like Health for All or something like that. Essentially it's paid for by the city. It's not a party political thing. And they managed to incorporate that kind of sloganing in there. I suppose what I'm getting to, also what they do is they take the colors of the ANC often and will say, Joburg is doing a great job. We've had a really good year in Joburg, and that billboard is yellow and green.
it leaves little to the imagination, yes.
Yes.
It's smart stuff.
Yeah, so they're quite good at the branding. Are they, and the marketing? Do you think that's still a good message? Do you think it's still working? Does Jacob Zuma damage their brand? Because they still, they've got a billboard now with Jacob Zuma kind of looking outwards towards, I don't know, whatever.
Kandler, probably.
Sure, yeah. Or from and Kandler to the Gupta's house. And, advertising using him. And is that still a clever thing to do?
It's a hard thing to say. I mean, I'm giving you here, there's no science in this, but personally, opinion, I think no question is he's damaged the brand. And the result of that we'll see in the local elections and to what extent that is. But it's also to what extent there's a realistic alternative, which is a separate subject. So let's not go down that road for now. So let's stick with the question. Mm. Yes, no question he's damaged the brand. Putting his mug on a billboard, does it help? No, I don't think it does. Does it reinforce? Yes, it does. But it reinforces to an echo chamber, if you like. But there's a long history of using the president's face as the ballot box, literally.
In terms of the marketing side of things, because from what I understand, my little bit of marketing knowledge, for instance, if you use a washing powder when you move out of home, you're 20 years old, you start using Omo, and
'cause your mother used it,
or you're not sure what to use, and you go to the shops and you like the branding or whatever it is, and you buy the Omo. Chances are you'll forever then use Omo. It's hard to kind of change those users'
habits.
Do we have a similar kind of habit running with the ANC and ANC voters? It's what they know. It's what they like. They have a good reputation, or that they did for close on 100 years. Is that plays a lot into their branding and their marketing?
Yeah, I mean, I say when I talk about equity in the sense, not in the financial sense, you're talking about brand equity. You know what I'm talking about, or maybe some of the listeners don't. But it's the value that the brand has. So Omo has a great deal of equity in certain chunks of the market, and Skip has great equity in certain chunks of the market. I'm just picking that category because you did. Because they've marketed consistently, they've got a good product, it works, it's reasonably cost effective, it delivers what it promises, and it's priced competitively compared to the opposition, and it's what you know and what you trust. And the lower down the pyramid you are from a financial point of view, the more trust plays a factor and a key factor. Very simple economics. You can't afford to spend 30 Rand buying an alternative brand that you haven't tried before, because you can't take that risk. It plays into all sorts of things. A woman heading the household, buying a meal, will not buy a brand that she doesn't know, a brand of rice or a brand of mini meal or whatever it is that she's not known and is not familiar with, and that her husband, in certain instances, is more patriotic, and more paternal cultures, approves of. Which is very important. Let's not open that can of worms right now.
No, not yet. But let's go back to politics. So, excuse me. So the ANC has got a brand, a very strong one. It has been diminished a bit recently. What do you find about the DA at this for this particular election? Because I think their posters are actually the best ones.
Do you? Why?
Relatively, because you can see the candidate.
Do I get to ask some questions?
Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah. Well, personally, because I can see the candidate, what he looks like. I see the ANC now has started doing that recently with the placards on the street. You can see the candidate. The colours are blue. And
yeah, although they've blacked and they've gone on a money-saving exercise, I assume, and so their candidates are all black and white, where I noticed the ANC candidates seem to be... in
are you
colour.
Talking about the race or the colour on the black
the colour of
the photograph?
The printing, yeah.
So
the DA, no. So what the DA have at the moment is they've got a lot of posters with Musi Maimane on them. It's the same poster, essentially. It's a front shot of Musi Maimane. You can see his head and his sort of his bust, essentially.
Yep.
And then above him, there will be a slogan. So it might be in English, Afrikaans, Zulu, Sotho, etc.
And I think it's vote for change.
Vote for change. There's a few, they vary it, I think. That's the one. And then the one where they actually want you to vote for Joe Bloggs, they have a photo of Joe Bloggs, which is a black and white photo. And then it'll say like Ward 60, you know. Whereas the ANC, I saw one of their posters. Very unfortunate. The guy happens to have, I think, like some sort of growth on his lip or something. So he kind of and he's got this comb over, so he kind of looks a bit like Hitler. But but if you live in the Linden area, you'll see the poster I'm talking about. I almost took a photo, but I felt bad about the growth on his lips. So, you know, and mocking him for that. But now that I've done it to a large radio audience, podcast,
you can introduce the DA to Photoshop as well.
Well, that's the ANC. So the ANC's got the colour. They've spent the money. I suppose they have it to spend. So getting back to
Romance. Anyway, can I talk on my own podcast, please? Bloody hell. So how do you find the DA in this particular election? I mean, I just think that the posters are right, but I don't know anything else about them.
Well, look, I mean, you know, basic stuff like your brand identity, your colours, and so on, and presenting your candidate is fairly bog standard in street posters in political advertising circles, and that is the main medium in political advertising in South Africa. They spend a great deal more there than anywhere else, all of the parties. So I think it's pretty awful because they don't tell me anything and they don't promise me anything. I think the line, as you just said, was together for change.
Or vote for change.
Vote for change, okay. Yeah. So change what? Change my underpants, change my shoes.
Exactly.
What does it mean? It's an empty...
But yes, we can, Justin. Yes, we can.
Yeah, but hang on a second. I'll take on that one because yes, we can. And what was Obama's line? Hope.
Yeah, yes. It was hope with that,
the first election
tricolor poster.
Yeah. I think you got to look at marketing and advertising and politics in context. U.S. very different set of circumstances, different levels of education, different levels of understanding, of complexity of messaging, etc., etc. One singular language, English. Well, if you exclude the Hispanics,
but they probably are considerable, but they probably speak some English,
and they translate them anyway in the areas. You know, South Africa, you've got 11 languages plus several other, you know, the Radovan Kretjer languages and others on the sideline. You don't really count on the numbers, but you know, you've got that complexity, number one. But more, you know, being vague is it just doesn't work. Being complex is probably worse. The example that I used recently in a piece I wrote was, let's not sidetrack to that, was the EU referendum, the Brexit campaign. Well, Brexit, leave, stay campaigns, where the Remain party or Remain camp were vacuous in their messaging.
Yeah.
You know, basically what it amounted to was, well, more of the same. Well, people don't want more of the same. They want change, but we're coming back to the DA, they're saying change, but change what? You know, that what they have learned is to stop attacking Zuma. because it's not about it. It's not about stop attacking the ANC through Zuma and using Mandela and Mbeki as sort of poster boys, because all they were doing was feeding the ANC equity.
That was great. So it was stop Zuma and but Mandela and Mbeki were great. It was like, well, they, guys, you're in the opposition.
Yeah, they're still doing making that alone. Mistake. I think occasionally.
I think they do occasionally do, but I think they've actually made a probably. I'm assuming they've probably made sort of policy decision to try not to do so.
Yeah.
So I don't see it appearing in any materials, but I don't voraciously read a great deal of their material because it bores me to death.
What do you make of posters like when they put up a poster that says something like "E-tolls brought to you by the ANC, proudly brought to you by the ANC" or something like that?
I think that's tactical, and I think that's smart. I think that got attention of a segment that they hadn't appealed to before, and gave them a segment of the voting population, and gave them a reason to consider.
Yeah,
and I think that's certain, and in Johannesburg in particular, because it was no question. I mean, there isn't I don't know anybody across the spectrum who's a fan of E-tolls, justified or not justified, and how they went about it. So ignore that part. Those sort of tactical things are much smarter than going around saying vote for change. Or their last election 2014, which was Together for Change and Together for Jobs, or Together what? Who? It's insidious. Not insidious. It's
vacuous.
They are vacuous
to a degree. That's in a way. Really.
It's just no meaning. We absorb somewhere around 20,000 to 30,000commercial messages a day. South Africans do.
Yeah.
How's that going to break through?
Is a lot of marketing kind of the same, though? Is a lot of it kind of meaningless?
About 95%, in my personal opinion, yeah.
Yeah. In terms of, let's just stick with the DA for a second. They changed their whole brand. I don't know how long ago it was now. Must be 8 or 10 years. In terms of that logo that they went to. In fact, it would be about 8 or 9 years because it was Barack Obama's. There was a whole controversy at the time.
They nicked it from Obama's logo in his first election.
Yeah,
first
campaign.
Because it looked very similar. Mm. But has that worked well for them? Was that a good idea? What do you think about that? I mean, you've got an ANC who stood with one kind of logo and brand for decades.
Well, a century.
Yeah.
Almost. I think a visual identity is very important, and strength of visual identity is very important. It becomes more important the more established you are as a brand, only because, the universal example is you're walking down the supermarket shelves and you see something you recognize. Go back to you're 20 years old, you left home, which washing powder do I buy? You buy the one that you recognize. The others you don't know because you're not familiar with the category, or toothpaste or whatever it is that you have to buy. So it is, and I've generally found, and I mean this globally, and I was going through recently for some reason or other, the president, the U.S. presidential, what do they call it, the primaries, and all the candidates that were afforded and their logos. Then somebody had written a piece on the identities of these individuals, and bar one out of the 15 or so, they were absolutely shocking, from a design point of view.
Well, the Jeb one was really bad.
Jeb
with an exclamation mark in like the closest thing you can find to Comic Sans.
Exactly. And these guys are, these are multimillionaires, most of them, who've got hundreds of or tens of millions of dollars behind them. Do you think they might go and spend $5,000 hiring a design shop to do a decent job for them? No. So to the question, does the DA, it doesn't tell me anything. I think it's reflective of what the DA isn't, rather than what it is, because I don't think the DA knows what it is, in personal opinion. I think they're very confused, and the whole leadership change from Zilla to Maimane, I think it's confused them. There's the internal battles, and they don't know how to break through outside of Cape Town, and that's their biggest challenge. And identity is part of that, and it's their core reason for being. It's just jumping around, attacking Zuma for 5 years and with the ANC via Zuma for 5 years is a really, really weak strategy.
We have discussed this before with Gareth and Onsen specifically about the liberalism within the DA. Is it still the defining factor of the DA, or is it purely service delivery and to appeal to the middle class black voters is the biggest issue they have, because people would rather not vote ANC and not vote for anyone else.
This is my vote.
Then vote DA.
Yeah.
And their job is,
Or even the lower class voters, but they have a general problem appealing to black voters. We know this. This is old news. Interestingly, just on, I know it's an opinion and all the rest, but on the liberalism and, you know, where the DA stands, because they were a liberal party at one point, and I think you could argue that they aren't currently, or they have deserted some of those values, at least in my opinion. Gwen and Gwenya actually wrote a great piece this week, so the listeners can go look it up. I think it's BD Live published it, talking about this exact problem, about where they stand and identity. So I think while it isn't necessarily a fact, and we like to talk about facts, not feelings, the feeling seems to be amongst many sort of long-standing kind of DA supporters who might have supported UDF and other kind of previous bodies that led to the DA, generally have this sort of sense that things are not what they should be.
Yeah, I think they've lost their compass, so to speak, and their core purpose there, which goes to their identity. We know what they're trying to achieve from a voter point of view, but what's their, you know, if they were for, which is not going to happen, but if they were for just, entertain the idea for a minute, to take charge of government in a majority, what would they do? They've got manifestos and lots of stuff, but it's vague and indistinct in a lot of respects, and I think by and large quite unprofessional.
Well, that's why I like to call them the ANC light. So they take ANC policy and make it better. A few weeks ago, they had make social grants, increase them to inflation levels. And then they berated the minister for staying in the hotel for 11,000 rand a night or whatever. It's like, guys, social grants are not your idea. And secondly, why are you agreeing with the ANC on social grants and then you want to increase them? Mm. None of these are your ideas whatsoever. You're just acting. It's like virtue signaling at its worst.
Well, again, it comes to, I don't think they have an overarching strategy in terms of how to deal. They've got bit parts, so they know what to attack. But attacking the opposition is the easiest thing to do. Finding fault is the easiest
thing. But can I just say, you're a libertarian, right? You see yourself in that sense. And I think, and I often say that I think the DA would be great if they won every local election and the ANC continued as the national government, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are things they do wrong at a national level, foreign policy, for one example.
Yep.
I have a problem with the fact that the DA's manifesto when it comes to national election is very vague and they actually don't know what they're doing. I've raised the point on health, which I know a fair amount about, and they are clueless.
Yeah.
And they also, as Ramon says, they just toe the ANC line, but they go no to national health, but then propose, if you look in the manifesto, something very similar. What they've done in Cape Town, in Western Cape, is not much dissimilar. They're just not taxing the populace for it over and above. I think though, in some sense, as a libertarian, you might like a DA government, because I think that from the sense of just get to work and kind of make the trains run instead of interfere with how people use the trains, they may kind of be hamstrung to the point that that's what they end up doing. I think in the Western Cape, for example, they've had a lot of opportunity to try and institute provincial type legislation of their kind of ideas and their policies. They've done essentially none of it. They haven't put forward anything crazy, I think because they're scared, maybe. Maybe rightfully so. And so what they've done is come in and gone, okay, let's just make shit work.
Be efficient.
Yeah, let's be efficient. And so I don't know if I would be necessarily against that. I think a lot of people go, well, we're not sure the DA would know how to govern nationally. It's different to governing in the Western Cape. I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
But if all they did was just make stuff work, I'd be perfectly fine with that. And that's all that I want from government.
Me too. And I completely agree with you. I think it's a very valid point that you make. And all you have to do is visit Cape Town and I'm not the biggest fan of Cape Town. Well, I love Cape Town. It's the people who live there that sometimes. and I don't mean that to all. You've got listeners in Cape Town, so I've got some very good friends there too. So I'm being slightly facetious. So but it's very visible as a visitor. So is PE is very visible. And, you know, I spend quite a lot of time going around the country. It's very, the various cities, and where government works, where local government works, it's quite obvious if you look for it. Yeah. Or even if you don't look for it, but I mean, if you're blind and you drive around with blindfold, you'll miss it. But if you just look at the standards, so from a libertarian point of view, Cape Town runs well, and the trains run, and et cetera.
But that's a fascist point of view as well. Like Mussolini wanted the trains to run on time, didn't he?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's fascist.
I know, just I kidding. Know,
you're being facetious.
All right, can I ask? We've spoken a lot about the DA. You know, listeners who aren't interested in the DA,
EFF.
Yes, that's where I want to get to,
because their posters are interesting.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've seen them in you live on the coast.
Yes.
So in Johannesburg, you got a red poster with yellow writing.
Yep.
And it says 4 or 5 words: free Wi-Fi for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, more houses for the poor. Like very basic signaling.
Yeah. Toilets. The running toilets issue.
So how are those? I think they're actually pretty good.
The EFF of the whole lot is the best, but only. They've only gotten so now in the last couple of years.
But are they the best in that they do very well from a marketing perspective, in the sense that the message is quite clear. It is actually a thing that they're promising.
Yeah.
But then I almost feel like it's like a lot of marketing, which promises you something that it will never be able to deliver.
Yeah, but that's not the point, though.
I'm the marketing guest. I'm saying from a marketing point of view, it's very good. So you just confirmed what I was about to say.
Yeah.
Which is, at least they're making promises, whether they deliver on them or not. I mean, how many political parties do you know actually deliver on their promises anywhere in the world? I mean, that's another subject altogether. But what they're doing, and it's led very much by Julius Malema, as we all know, the character and the personality that he is. And, you know, he's direct, he's to the point, he's blunt, he's crystal clear. It may be absolute pie in the sky, but it buys votes. And that's good marketing. And just look at how they appear, their overalls and their uniforms. It's brilliant marketing. I don't know anywhere in the world where a bunch of parliamentarians walk into the House all dressed in a uniform and making us not just a work in a particular style of uniform that makes it very clear. It's brilliant branding. They're great at that.
But does it matter if it was intended or not?
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter at all.
It doesn't matter. It's what it is, like everything else. So they're doing it, and they're doing it well. I think it took them a while to get there. In my view, it took them a while to get there, and I really only think they've gotten it together, and they've realized, whether it was intentional or not, they've actually realized that they've got something really valuable here, and they're not letting go of it.
Well, arguably, they're the only political party to have no consequence whatsoever from this election. Only positive consequences could come for them.
They've got nothing to lose.
Nothing at all.
They can only gain, absolutely. Yeah. Because they're saying something, well, not only. I mean, it's not just their communication, but they are promising something to a bunch of disenfranchised people, or a very large bunch of disenfranchised people, who have nothing else to cling to. Whereas the DA is not really promising anything, so...
No, but change. Change is important.
Yeah, sure. You know, when I leave here, I'll change my deodorant.
So if I may, I actually wanted to ask you, have you got anything more on the EFF, Jonathan?
No, I think it's pretty roundly summed up. DA is shit, ANC is the usual, and the EFF is something new and decent.
Yes. The others are just, they're not really worthwhile talking about, but I think the ANC has become shit as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so right. So just to justify qualify my opening statement where I said it's crap or something similar to that, with the exception of the EFF, it is all trite nonsense.
So if you had to, if a political party came to you anywhere in the world and said, okay, we want you to run our campaign, and there has been a few great ones in the past, how would you go about doing it? Not specifically in terms of, I will write this on a placard, but what messaging do you want people to see from that campaign?
Well, what you want to see is what the party stands for and how it differentiates itself from the opposition. So, you know, I can't take a bland example. I've got to take a real example.
Give us something. You brought some stuff along, so I mean, let's explore worldwide what's been some stuff that's worked or
hasn't. I mean, I'd rather do that than talk theory because
absolutely.
I can't say brand X and because like anything, I've got to know what their strategy is, and communication strategy needs to follow, the marketing strategy needs to follow the business strategy. And in the commercial world, a lot of the time those two are not aligned, which is why one of the reasons, and probably the biggest reason, why 95% of marketing communication, or a large percentage of it, is particularly dross, because it's not aligned from the outset. So the brand, the business is going in this direction, and they're saying things that are not the reality on the ground when the consumer interacts with it. So to go back to the political examples, my favorite of all time, and I love British advertising more than any other, is the 79 poster that marched Maggie Thatcher into power, which for the listeners was a single line called the headline, Labor Isn't Working, and a visual of several hundred people in a line at the unemployment office. Very simple graphic, big bold headline, nothing else. Labor isn't working. It's copywriting genius.
Yeah, because it means many things.
It means many things. And it says there's many messages mixed into three words.
Yeah.
And understand, a great deal of electioneering happens on the streets. It happens in the street poster or on posters in the medium of outdoor or out of home. And, excuse me, from an advertising point of view, from a communication point of view, you can't get complexity across in 30 seconds or 20 seconds or 10 seconds or half a second. So that's a rule number one. But the hardest thing to do as an advertising practitioner, as a creative person, is to deliver a message on a billboard. It's the hardest thing to do. It's much easier in 30 seconds with audiovisual. You've got music, you've got tone, you've got all sorts of things that factor into it, or on radio and so on. In a print magazine, you can write 300 words of copy or 1,300 words of copy if you like. If you're the long copy versions, it still works in certain instances. But on an outdoor poster, you've got to be absolutely
to the point, spot on.
Five words or less.
Yeah.
That works on that level. That's one of the few that I have that I like. One of the other examples I have here. Which, excuse me a second.
Not Crooked Hillary.
I've got Hillary. We'll come to her. Is Trump. I don't particularly want to discuss Trump and American politics. So let's stick to the marketing subject. But Make America Great Again sounds particularly trite to a lot of people. It's like, so what, Make America Great Again? But if you look at who he's targeting and who will support him,
yeah.
Make America Great Again means a lot of different things. It makes a lot of sense. It could mean anything. Make America, in what sense? And there are harking back to the past when it was the land of milk and honey and the promised land and the entrepreneur's paradise. And obviously there's conflicts in that where we don't want Syrians or Eastern Europeans pouring into our borders and making themselves. There's lots of conflicts in it. But if you go across the red swathe of Midwest America, Make America Great Again is going to resonate in their hearts. And let's be honest, people think with their – well, they don't think with their hearts, but they vote with their hearts and not with their heads.
But what's great about that, it could be about anything. It could be
exactly
the victory after World War II. It could be about abolishment of slavery. It could be
about gun licenses.
It could mean absolutely anything to anyone. And people are like, yeah, that makes sense.
And it's not. And so as an overarching campaign line and promise, it has a great deal of resonance.
I know you don't want to get into Donald Trump, but in some ways, is he not a bit of a marketing genius? And maybe it's not him, maybe it's other people, but it seems to be him because he can stand up and talk off the cuff. He does these almost typically sort of textbook type of things where he repeats the message again and again and again. He says simple things that you will go away with and remember, even if they are stupid. He's been a marketing genius in a way in his campaign.
He's the consummate PR man. Just forget the way in which he goes about it,
or even the content of what he's saying.
Forget the content. He's a consummate PR man, as is Boris Johnson, who actually is one of my favorite politicians.
But love Boris Johnson.
Yeah. Same here.
So much butthurt this week over him, but anyway, we can't discuss him.
No, let's not go there. If we have time, we might get onto the referendum. But and I think, like Julius Malema, And that's what populists do, is they're likable to... And you can contradict yourself, which Trump has done, I don't know how many times. Julius Malema contradicts himself every second sentence. His audience doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
They don't. Because he can say anything. He can say that the sun revolves around the earth, and half of his voters will hear it and believe it, and the other half won't even hear it. It doesn't matter.
I read a great article about Trump, sorry, just get back to him, and his tweets. Because he's one of those politicians, he has his own account, and he tweets himself.
Yes.
And he sends out 20, 30 tweets a day. And there was an article saying he sends out all these tweets, and he checks the reactions to them, and then incorporates those tweets into the speeches he's going to make later on.
Oh,
it's brilliant.
He's trolling for ideas.
Like Crooked Hillary was a tweet originally, and now he's just made it his almost a slogan after Make America Great Again. There's Crooked Hillary, folks.
Listen, I mean, if you look at if you look at personalities the world over, whether they're in Hollywood, whether they're in the music business, you know, public personas, that's a huge part of their marketing, is aside from social media, they pull these ideas and these notions and these words and these sentences and these claims out of their own audiences and feed it back. So, I mean, how many times have you tweeted something that just, you know, that your fan base just, it just resonates with them, and off it goes. And
well, self-affirmation. Exactly.
That's what it is.
Yeah. What about Hillary? Because you've got a logo there, which for those of you who don't know, it's an H. But they've made the line through the H. Sorry, I cut Ramon off.
Yes, because he keeps cutting me off.
Yeah, because you've been on Frankly Speaking lately. And you know what it's like to be cut off.
I'm going
to
say it. Hillary's logo looks like the Twin Towers. That's all I'm saying.
So it's an H. The line through the line that joins two things is an arrow, and it says Hillary for America. And they've played with it a bit. They've put some sort of other things at times through the H and all that kind of thing. And they've made some mess-ups with that. I can try to look for it quickly. Where they were trying to... I think there was one where they were trying to side with the LGBTQIRSTUV community but made a complete mess of it. Anyway, in terms of a marketing perspective on that?
Well, I just pulled that one. That's the overarching logo for a campaign, Hillary for America. What does Hillary for America say? It says Hillary. It doesn't say anything about America. It says, buy me, but it doesn't tell you why.
Well, that's typical of Hillary, though.
Well, exactly. You know, she doesn't know how to, possibly because of her elitist background and whatever else, but let's not get into that. I don't want to get into slander, but she...
Feel free to do so.
No. But I think your audience probably gets enough of that. It's meaningless, and it's all about Hillary. There's nothing in it. It's empty. It's just vacuous again. Hillary for America. What the fuck does that mean? And if you look at some of her other, I've brought like one or two examples of how she's rolled that out in various things. I went to Hillary.com or whatever it's called, which was terrifying. reason number 74 why we need Hillary, and there's a picture of Hillary and Bill and a grandchild, and they're
because they can reproduce. No, that's is that from her website?
Yes.
Reason number 74.
There's a whole campaign of reason. There's 74 reasons or 174.
This is when you try to market to millennials.
But is this the official grandchild or one of Bill's other children's grandchild?
It could be a cigar, but I'm not sure. Anyway, so that's the picture of doting grandparents over this little baby smiling. And the headline says, "It's time we had a grandmother in chief."
Oh, my word.
It's you couldn't get more awful. Twee if you tried. Here's her attack on the Republicans. Reason number 0003, hashtag 0003, why we need Hillary, as a picture of Donald, if you see it in color with an orange face. So worst possible pose, he looks pretty ugly. With the headline, it says, we can't afford a Republican in the White House. What does that mean?
Like Ronald Reagan?
Who
balanced the budget? Well, no, he didn't really, but anyway. that means nothing at all.
That means nothing at all. Listen, there's about 174 of them. So if you want some entertainment, go to Hillary.com or whatever.
That's it. If I was an American, I would have wanted 175 reasons. Now that there's only 174, can't possibly vote for her.
If you can tweet her, then and she might pick up one of those lines and use it.
Was one of them more secure email servers?
There was nothing about email service that I saw. No, no.
That would be reason
surprisingly,
one.
Surprisingly.
Reason number one.
And, you know, so that you can get the Secret Service to watch your husband.
So.
Oh, I found the Hillary logo that was, let me just show you guys, the Hillary logo that caused controversy. So for Black History Month, I think it was. Oh. They did a Hillary logo with Rosa Parks sitting on the H, okay. But as you can see, Rosa Parks is actually sitting on the back of the H, which, if you know the story, essentially was part of the problem is that black people were segregated to sit to the back of the bus.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and that was officially released by her campaign. So
we'll tweet out that picture when the podcast goes live. Wow,
that's I hadn't seen that one. That is.
So I mean, that's really a big sort of error.
It's slightly larger than a faux pas, yes.
But also in terms of messaging between Trump and Hillary, Trump is about, it appears to me, okay, it's crooked Hillary often, but then it's about, you know, building the wall, saving jobs, protectionism, like, oh crap, shit. But it's solutions. Hillary, I don't know any proposals. I know she hates Trump.
Well, it's the same as, we won't get into the terror attack, but there was a terror attack in Nice last night. Yeah. And she goes out and she turns around and goes, "We must continue our fight." That was her message on, she phoned into Fox News or something. What does that mean, you know?
Yes, bomb Syria or bomb Iraq or bomb somebody. That's generally what it means.
Yeah, it's, I think, but I agree with Ramon that a lot of the messages just kind of don't mean anything. And I've said that I think a lot of people buy into Trump. It's the same as on the political correctness line. So instead of holding his tongue because he doesn't want to offend someone, he doesn't hold his tongue, sometimes to his detriment.
Yep.
But at the same time, he says real things. And it seems like there globally is a backlash to politicians who kind of don't say anything. I have a problem with he's gotten better, I must say, but Musima Imani, as an example, I found him also to be before he took leadership of the party, to be honest, he had a lot of these sort of empty kind of platitudes.
Platitudes. The clueless politician's favorite fallback.
Yeah.
Platitude.
And so I don't think you appeal to anyone with those kinds of things because when people don't understand meaning of something, then they don't buy into it.
There is no meaning in the first instance. Yeah. There's nothing to buy into. So.
And I think, you know, you talked about the Remain campaign. You know, we're not going to change anything, but also they kind of couldn't say what the huge benefits were. They couldn't nail it down, whereas Leave were giving what the huge benefits were or the disadvantages were. They may have been wrong about those things, but you've got one side actually giving some sort of reality, what they believe to be a reality, and another side not.
Well, another side just painting the walls white.
Yeah.
And saying, you know, well, it's status quo. When it comes to election time, status quo doesn't generally work very well. And I think that's a good lead into the Brexit campaign.
Let's do Brexit.
To go there and leave the Americans alone for a while. But yeah, I mean, just at one point, I mean, Hillary, absolutely, there's no substance there. That doesn't mean that she's not going to win the election. But it means that if there was a much stronger Republican
candidate,
not necessarily candidate, but a much stronger Republican campaign, that it might be a great deal closer than we think.
Interesting. I don't know if you've noticed, we'll stick with the Americans for one sec. Trump seems to have changed his messaging a little bit, and he seems to have softened in the past sort of 2 weeks. It's a correlation, but he's gone up in the polls. So he hasn't said anything crazy.
Yep.
He said some, you know, he said his stuff, but sure, nothing crazy, nothing, you know, Mexicans or rapists kind of stuff.
He's not the batshit Trump that he has been.
Yeah, and even if you look at his Twitter account, you can actually go back. You can go back 3 weeks and see, like, geez, I can't believe he tweeted that. Basically, around the time he tweeted that Star of David sort of similar thing with Hillary, I don't know if you know about
it. I didn't see it. No.
He, someone had made a meme, Hillary Clinton. The background behind her was money, like piles of money.
Yeah.
And then in a Star of David, they had written Hillary Clinton with her logo and then greedy or something to that, right? The problem was obviously the correlation to kind of the alt sort of right that supports Trump, which is has many anti-Semitic moments, and obviously that correlation that was in there. He retweeted it, took it down 6 hours later, then tried to defend it. And it was a huge mess, basically. It didn't work well for him. But since then, something seems to have changed in his campaign. And if you go after then and look at his tweets, they're still Donald Trump, but they're very much more measured. And I wonder if that change in messaging now that he's going into a national kind of vote is going to work in his favor a lot, actually. Because he's already picked up the guys by being crazy.
Yeah. Look, I think you're very spot on. I mean, you know, when you start out, I mean, I wrote it somewhere that I don't think anyone but Donald Trump ever imagined that he might get to the to the presidential race. Well, maybe a couple of rednecks down south, but not the rest of the world, certainly. But it's very common in campaign strategy, and I think what Trump is, as lunatic as he is, I think he's probably got some very smart advisors there. Campaign advisors, not just on election strategy, but on communication strategy, which is, at the end of the day, it's kind of, there are two different things, but they should meld into one. And he will, I suspect that he will become more and more measured and will flip-flop on a few positions or certainly move towards the middle and become more of a fence-sitter and become more like
it's
a
only
Musi
Mamani. Presidential.
And become presidential because it's a necessary component. Being the radical the populist has gotten this far, some of that he can't – well, in my opinion, if I was to advise him, I would personally advise him to pull back the throttle on that and become a little more tolerant or a little more mainstream.
And the best way you see that was the response to the Dallas shooting when the five cops were killed by a sniper, so to speak. He wrote a speech. He says, it's a tragedy. We must look after our cops. Let's try work together, etc. Hillary says white people must listen to black people more carefully.
Well,
that was her message after the Dallas cop shooting.
He's talking, you know, it's a platitude, but it's a platitude that doesn't, and the reason it's a platitude is it doesn't displease anyone, and it says the right thing.
No, he did the right thing.
Yeah, no, I'm saying he did the right thing.
Hillary says
it into a social justice warrior campaign and loses credibility to,
absolutely.
I mean, look, she's after, you know, those are the people she's after.
But I want to get into social justice warrior stuff and how I think it affects polling, because I know you've got some opinions on polling.
Yes, polling.
But hold on, before we get to polling, we've stopped you talking about Brexit.
Look, it's your show, so you direct me.
No.
In terms of time.
It's
okay, Brexit, I mean, this was, for me, it was just, it was a classic example of, and I'm not talking about just about advertising campaigns, but advertising becomes the visual identifier. It's the picture in the long copy story kind of thing.
Yeah,
because it is a summation of where a party or a group has gone right or wrong or what their positions are. And I think the Remain camp, as I said earlier, just had nothing to say. Here's just a handful of examples. First of all, big mistake that they made in my view is that they had, I think, three or four different ad agencies working on their campaign. Because there were lots of different parties involved,
uniformity.
And so each agency was given a slightly different brief, probably, and came up with four completely different campaigns and slogans, and then nothing looked similar. I mean, that's mistake number one, which is just chronic. And they had very good agencies working for them, some of the best in the world.
Yeah.
Here's one with we can tweet pick these after the show if you like. You know, there's a picture of an open door and surrounded by white space and a set of stairs up to the door into a dark void. And it says, leave and there's no going back. Well, that's a statement of the obvious, you know. You know, you'd have to be sub-intelligent not to know that once you exit, you can't turn around. That's a one-way street. So it doesn't tell me anything. And then
that might actually prompt some people to vote leave. In terms of going,
it might, yes.
In terms of going, cool.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I want.
Thank goodness.
I don't want to go back. I'm trying to leave. So you've just reinforced my own position, sure. And then here's another one. Their television stuff is just too appalling to talk about, and it's too complex to explain television on radio. Don't let them gamble with your future. And there's which I find this deeply ironic, is a picture of the three characters at the craps table. Boris in the middle, throwing the dice. Nigel on his left with a silly grin on his face, and what's his name? He dropped out of the
Michael Gove.
Thank you. Gove looking on at Boris admiringly.
Yeah, so the point of the advert was that they're just gambling.
Well, they're gambling.
With the future of the country by asking people to vote leave.
So it's not, I'll come back to the irony, but there's a message in it, sure, but it's just as much as a gamble to stay. There's no certainty in staying as there is in leaving.
In terms of advertising, so what they've done in this particular ad is they've found each of those people in like a singular moment of them pulling a silly face. And if we had enough cameras on us, as these guys do all the time, you easily will get a frame of you looking absolutely horrific.
Yeah.
You can do it with anyone. I mean, the Trump campaign's done it with Hillary, and Hillary's done it with Trump. You can find shots of Jacob Zuma where he looks dodgy.
Sleeping.
All these things.
Picking his nose.
So if there's a camera following you enough, you can find something. Does that work with people in general in marketing? I'm just wondering, because if they instinctively dislike someone, then maybe it works for them. But I think most people, especially in this age, know what it's like to be caught on camera and with an image of yourself that you don't like. And so I'm wondering if that resonates poorly with people, if they go, oh, well, that's not cool to kind of publish a photo of the guy that you managed to like catch in an off moment. I don't know how deeply the marketing sort of resonates with people, but
well, I think that I don't know when they ran this. I must be honest, I pulled these off the screen grabs from the internet. But if that had been at the outset, early on in the campaign, and that had left it behind, I'd have much less of an issue of it. But certainly, if they ran that deep into the campaign, where you're talking about an 11% swing vote, because that's, as we know, politics. Polls, elections revolve around, or referendums revolve around, the swing voter. The diehards are the diehards, and they're quite easy to spot. That is going to definitely unsettle a couple of people the wrong way.
Yeah.
In that 11%, or would have.
Yeah.
Because they will react angrily, because nobody likes any politician wholeheartedly, or nobody buys into any politician wholeheartedly, because politicians, like chief executives of companies and lots of other people, have to make compromises all the time. That's the game. they just do it in the public domain, and they're focused on with a great deal of intensity. So, characterization, which that is, which you're talking about in terms of the images that they found, they've comped them together, is an easy thing to do. I think tactically used, it can be used very, very cleverly. And some brands do that quite well. I mean, Nando's is the obvious example. I think they're doing it quite poorly in the last couple of years. But
Changing agencies every 3 years.
Yeah, that would help. but let's not go there. And so using characterization and character assassination is the oldest trick in the book. Done well at the right time, be extremely, as a tactic, as a strategy, no, it's crap. The tactic, yes.
Okay. You've mentioned polling, so let's get there quick. I know you've got the breaking point poster there.
Yes.
Maybe you want to say something about that quick, and then we can get into the polling.
No, that was just, I had that there as an example of the Leave campaign and how vague they were, and scattered all over the place. Messages saying lots of different things, but no coherence to it. You have multiple messages in any campaign, but they've all got to support the primary message, the primary thrust of the campaign. There's no focus to that campaign. That was my point, as there wasn't to the people behind it. The politicians behind it, they couldn't agree on much. Whereas Farage, like or hate him, we call it racist, call it whatever you want. There's a certain standing there in front of the breaking point, or that very poster. That's pretty powerful. To people who
the listeners who don't know
whether it's responsible. Oh, sorry. Yes.
Yeah. It's just Nigel Farage standing in front of a poster. The billboard is essentially a shot of thousands of migrants flooding a border. I actually think it's the Estonian border or something like that. It's actually not anywhere near Britain. But they took that image and then they just put the words "breaking point."
Yeah.
And obviously immigration was one of the big issues in the Brexit. Anyway, so you're saying.
Okay, so whether you find it responsible or not, and that's a whole other subject, let's not go there. Is it effective? Yes, it's effective. Does it have a downside? Absolutely, it has a downside, because a whole bunch of other people see that as racist. Or see it as, they'll see it the way they want to see it, and they'll pick and choose it the way they want to. And Farage came in for, or Farage, whatever, however you pronounce his name, came in for a lot of stick in the UK and elsewhere for pushing these issues, and so did Johnson and Gove and all of them, for being irresponsible and racist and this, that, and the next thing. But for God's sake, they're politicians and they're campaigning. You know, it's the Western world. It's a free country, freedom of speech, freedom of association, all of those other good things. This is what democracy is about. I've had this argument with a couple of friends as well, who, you know, British people who've come and said, oh, it's a disgrace. And aside from all those idiots who tweeted all that nonsense and said, South Africans, you know, bugger all about it, and the double standards, and let's not. And I was an English friend of mine, and he was going on about it. And I said, so you're anti-democratic then? And he said, no, I'm not. So I said, well, you just made a statement that is patently so, because you think that they're a bunch of hooligans and racists and irresponsibles and so on. All they did was appeal more to the majority of voters than the Leave side, than the Remain side did, and they did more effectively.
And in general, we love Brexit anyway. So
yeah, we're big fans.
Yes,
polling, right? So the polling, it's something we raised on the show before. Yeah. Polling seems to be getting it wrong
increasingly.
I don't know if that's actually correct. I don't know if we're not saying, well, the polling did say that there was a margin of error and it's within the margin of error, so maybe we're being unfair on the pollsters. I think certainly in the one example we've given before, which is the last British election, which brought David Cameron to his second term, they got it completely wrong. They essentially predicted an equal vote, 50-50, an equal parliament.
Too close to call was the word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And which they haven't used since Florida.
For Brexit polling as well.
For Brexit polling, they were wrong. I know in South Africa, they've been, you know, we've got this Ipsos poll, which is saying that the DA is going to basically win Nelson Mandela Bay.
I'm not buying it.
And that they've got good chance of winning Joburg and Tshwane. I'm not buying it either. I think they've got a fair chance in Nelson Mandela Bay. I think they've got no hope up here in Tshwane, much as I would like them to take control of those cities. What is going on with polling?
Okay, so my opening statement is going to be on polling is going to be very broad, which is that, and particularly, let's restrict it to political polling here, because I don't want to get into marketing and so on else. But it is probably the most inexact science imaginable. It's not scientific at all, because in essence, what you're asking people, you're having a stranger asking you something that probably to most people. To a lot of people, is very private. They're not going to tell you what they really think. And in 25 years of marketing research, as a byproduct of my profession, or let me call it not profession, but means to a crust of bread, it is notoriously unreliable when you ask people an opinion in a forum. When you're sitting around a dinner party with close friends, you're going to be much more open and easy and honest than you are with somebody on the telephone who's a complete stranger, particularly when plumbing the depths of something like who are you going to vote for, or you know, what toothpaste do you buy? Well, you don't give a damn whether you say Aquafresh or Colgate or whatever. Toothpaste is not a private care, personal care product. But if they phone you up and say what deodorant do you use, there's a little bit more of a barrier there. Or you know, what brand of feminine hygiene products do you use? Well, there's more than a couple of barriers to what the hell do you want to know that for? So it depends on the category. So that's the point made. There are lots of issues with methodology, and I won't go into the details of it. But the sample size, the stratification of the samples, the interview methodology, whether it's dedicated or it's an omnibus, and an omnibus is what Ipsos does, not all the time, but an omnibus is where they go out and ask 10 questions. And they're investigating, or not investigating, but they're researching a particular subject, and then they tag a political question on at the end. Let's keep it to politics. So, oh, by the way, who are you going to vote for? Or which party would you support? Or whatever the question is. So you've gone from 10 questions about toothpaste to which party you're going to vote for. If you think about the context and the tone of that conversation, you as the interviewee, it's a jump to the left, and you're going, hello, what's the agenda here? Did you just lead me in to talk about toothpaste for 10 for 9 questions and then ask me about which party I'm going to vote for? So automatically you've got a credibility issue, a huge credibility issue. So, and there's lots of issues in terms of stratification, the sample size. Stratification is it reflective of the population correctly in terms of the demographic stratification? But also with, you know, and the Americans have picked this up quite a lot in their polling, is they base their sample sizes on the election 5 years ago. So they say, okay, well, we want to poll, you know, 1,000 Democrats and 1,000 Republicans. Well, how do you know how many of those Republicans have actually switched sides, or how many of those Democrats have switched sides? So you're working with five-year-old data, which is, you know, 5 years is quite a long time. the other thing, and bear in mind also that you've got about a 1 in 20 in the Western world, about a 1 in 20 completion rate. So you have to get up to poll 1,000 people in the United States or in Britain, you've got to talk to 20,000. We've got to try and reach 20,000.
Yeah.
So that's expensive, and it's time consuming, and it's increasing. It was 1 in 10 10 years ago. It's now 1 in 20. The other issue is the rise of technology, cell phones, and the landline, because the historical method is phoning people at home.
Yeah, this has been a big thing.
In the States in particular, but also in the UK and Europe, they phone the landline. Now, millennials don't have landlines, most of them. They have a cell phone, and cell phone has caller identity. So do landlines these days for many years. So it's an unrecognized number. What do? You let it go to voicemail, or you delete it, or you push it away. And the people who do answer their phones are generally 50 plus. So of the 20,000 people that you approach, you actually get to a high concentration of 50-year-olds plus, yeah, who answer their damn phones. I'm putting it in very simplistic terms.
Yeah.
You're going to skew the sample very, very badly. And it's not going to reflect the reality. So those are some of the mechanical things, or mechanical methodological things. So I think there's a lot, and this is true for market research the world over. Doesn't matter what you're doing, it's not a science, for starters. Whether you do it online, you do it telephonically, whether you do it on the street, you do it in the supermarket, whatever it is, people are uncomfortable in general. Speaking, I'll say in general, it's a generalization, but a lot of people, are very significant people, are very uncomfortable talking about things that they prefer not to talk about in public and to strangers.
Yeah. So there's no solution, really.
I think there are solutions, but they're very expensive.
Okay.
There are definitely solutions. You've got to be much more exact. You've got to be much more scientific about it, and you've got to spend a lot more money. And that's the thing. Now, Ipsos is in the business of making money, so they're gonna tag on a thing. Some client or clients, plural, is paying for that poll. Now they're tagging on something on top of it. Why? Because, well, it's their form of advertising.
Let's go back a second. Someone pays for the Ipsos polls, as in a company.
Yeah.
So there's an agenda behind that.
Well, not necessarily, no. I mean, they're going out, that particular methodology, and there are lots of others, but that particular, the omnibus version I'm talking about is, it's for argument's sake, Colgate is doing a poll, doing some research, and Ipsos is carrying out conducting the research, and they've got 10 questions. So 9 of them Colgate is paying for, and the 10th one, they feed that to the media, yeah. So it's they're essentially... they're essentially defrauding their clients.
Yeah, they piggyback on someone else's campaign.
It's not defrauding. I mean, that's a very far too harsh a term.
Yeah.
Look, and let me not pick on Ipsos. They're not the only ones who do that. Everyone does it, just about. So and it's been globally accepted as a practice for far too long. There are dedicated studies, as you know, or dedicated research things in the States in particular, and in Europe, but the methodologies again are becoming more or less and less relevant because of the number of people you have to hit and the cost of hitting them. You've got an outbound call center trying to hit 20,000 people just to poll 1,000. You know, that takes whatever it takes, but it takes a fair amount of resource and time and money.
So if we wanted to provide data for a particular viewpoint for something, you would argue polling is very close to anecdotal on the scale of evidence. It's useful, but don't extrapolate too much truth from it.
Again, depending on the methodology.
Right.
So in the instance of an omnibus where it's tagged on, I attach zero relevance to it personally, just because I've seen so many rubbish results come out of it.
But if the poll starts with, we're here to ask you about your political beliefs, if it starts like that, the whole thing is aimed in that respect.
And if the sample size is stratified and the methodology is the most robust methodology that the industry has, it's dedicated, absolutely, then you do. But, you know, in elections are not a one-off thing. Well, they are, but the build-up to them, you know, people change their minds and the swings and so on and so forth. So you've got to poll them regularly and compare them to the previous thing. So you've got to poll to do that sort of thing. To get a real accurate representation, you've got to poll on a regular basis every month or 2 weeks.
And one thing I do want to talk about, so the British election, where David Cameron won for the second time by a much wider margin than the first time, those polls were 50-50 the whole way through. What do you think about where people are expressly public about how they vote? So you got a dyed-in-the-wool Tory on Twitter, and he's like, yes, I'm voting for David Cameron. He's the best president ever.
Yep.
And a lot of people attack him for that view. Is that public shaming changing the way people respond to polls?
Absolutely. Because it feeds what the pollsters call the spiral of silence.
Right.
Because it basically it negatively affects the very opening statement that I made about people are uncomfortable talking about it. And when you get outed and attacked in the Twitterverse or social media for being you not necessarily you, because you've got some balls, I know, in person I'm talking. You'll take a stance. But, you know, the average Joe Soap doesn't want to take a stance and doesn't want his friends and family attacking him or her on Facebook or on Twitter, or a bunch of strangers attacking them on Twitter. So they sort of go back into their shells and they become, you know, the spiral of silence. If people go quiet, go underground.
And then that manifests itself in when they actually vote. David Cameron wins by a huge margin that no one saw coming, because the same people who vote for David Cameron told the pollsters, I'm unsure, or yeah, maybe.
Or just to get rid of them, they said, yeah, I'll vote Cameron, or I'll vote Labour.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and people, you know, I mean. Here's my best example, and Jonathan, you might appreciate this.
Yeah.
You know, filling out a questionnaire for your medical aid. Well, we've all done it, okay? Or filling out any sort of medical questionnaire. So you come to what's your weight, and if you're at a certain age bracket, or it doesn't matter, but you go, well, you know, okay, I'm going to put X, but it's 2 kilograms lighter than I really am, but that's what I'm aiming for, so I'm going to put it here. And, you know, are you a smoker? No, definitely not a smoker. Have you ever smoked? I used to smoke 5 years, but that was so long. No, I never smoked. You know, how many tots of alcohol a week do you take? Don't tell me that anyone, well, not anyone, but what percentage of the population reports that stuff.
Truly.
Absolutely. It's the same principle. We're uncomfortable sharing very personal information.
Right. Yeah. No, it does make sense.
So that's why probably research of any form, not scientific research, I'm talking about researching human beings in terms of asking them questions and getting honest answers, is just, it's a minefield. I'm not saying it's not worthwhile doing, because there's plenty of research that's worthwhile doing, but you know, you've got to be very, very careful about what you read into those things, and you've got to look at the methodology and who's behind it and how it's been done before I'll read any credibility into it.
Right, that's something we will do on this podcast.
Yeah, well, we'll have to, because we have used some polling data previously.
The methodology was quite robust at the time.
You're talking about the Institute of Race Relations.
Well, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that one I think was a fair methodology. I mean, if you were familiar with it.
I know the Institute. And I know that stuff is robust.
Yeah.
And the Statistician General's, anything you get off Stats South Africa is robust.
Yeah.
There are lots of sources of very robust information.
Yeah.
It's when you get into opinion and choice that it's...
Right.
That it's a...
people it's have a opinions. Thing. It's 2016.
Everyone has an opinion.
Everyone has one. It isn't any different from 2,000 years ago. We just... The difference is that we have the ability to tell everyone, to tell the world about our opinions and have other people's feedback and other people attack us.
Well, we have to vacate the studio, I'm afraid. The big boss man's going to kick us out. Jonathan? Well, Justin, firstly, well, thank you so much for joining us.
Great pleasure. Thanks
all
for
the way
me.
From... Durban. Thank you for joining us. Keep listening. No doubt this will be your favorite episode when it comes out.
I don't think so.
Leave a nice 5-star review.
What's it like listening to yourself?
No, I hate listening to myself. I look at myself on TV, I refuse to do. It's just, it gives me the thrills.
Yeah. You can find Justin on Twitter, JustinNZA.
Right.
He has some often incisive things to say.
And on the Daily Maverick, Opinionistas, he's there as well. Good columns, by the way.
Go back and read of his stuff. Some really great stuff. And obviously, we like a lot of his opinions from the libertarian perspective.
Right, so that's us for this week, Jonathan.
That's it. Another hopefully good show that you enjoyed. Reminder to please start downloading this podcast onto your friends' phones. Just take their phones, hit the iTunes, press subscribe. Very simple. We want to get as many of you listening. We will have one of our adversaries on the show in the next month or so. They are starting to come, slowly but surely. We're dragging them into the studio.
Kicking and screaming.
Yeah, that's it for the show. Let's call it a day. Thanks so much. We'll catch you next time. CliffCentral.com.